The book I'm holding up to the microphone so you can all see it is called Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump by David Nyewert. Now, as with every book these days, it comes heavily burdened with accolades from other authors, but there's one in particular that I'm going to quote up front. And this is from Rick Perlstein, author of Nixon Land. David has been America's canary in the coal mine. Our national early warning system on the spread of corrosive right-wing hatred in our midst. Now, it's important to remember, dear listener, that plenty of journalists, they'll come into town, they'll look at this sort of topic, and then they ride on, they move on, whereas David has made it his turf for decades. So the seemingly sudden appearance of the far right in the US, which has left so many battered, bruised and bewildered, you know, there were plenty of warning signs. Steve Bannon and Alex Jones didn't just jump out of a cake. How did previously fringe movements of white supremacists, conspiracy theorists and insurrectionists emerge from the shadows and help pave the way for the Donald to become president? Well, David's book tells all. David joins me now via Skype from his home in Seattle. David, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
On Tuesday, I was talking to our regular American commentator, Bruce Shapiro, on the anniversary of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. And we were talking about how there was a surge of interest in white supremacy in the first year or two of the Reagan administration. And then in the following years, numbers dropped off and the movement fizzled. Do you see the dwindling numbers of supremacists at Unite the Right 2, 30 or 40 of them, as a sign that the movement could be losing momentum? I've got a feeling you saw it coming.
Well, yes. It wasn't actually hard to predict that this is only going to be a smattering of people showing up, because the organizer of the Unite the Right rally, a man named Jason Kessler, has fundamentally become sort of a persona non grata on the radical right, among, you know, white nationalists, neo-Nazis. Just about everybody doesn't want to have anything to do with Jason after what happened at Charlottesville. And so, yeah, it's not surprising at all that that he only had a handful of people out there. And that was actually what I predicted a couple of weeks before. But, you know, at the same time, no, I wish it meant that they were going away. It does mean that there's a lot of disarray in the movement right now. That's not surprising, because this is a movement that historically has always been given to disarray. Internecine quarreling and factional disputes are the entire history of the radical right. And because, you know, there's actually, if you ever meet these folks, they're some of the most paranoid, disputatious, unpleasant people you would ever want to meet. And so they're constantly warring and bickering with each other because they have gigantic egos and, like I say, paranoid dispositions. So they're very suspicious of each other all the time, and they're constantly accusing each other of, you know, participating in one conspiracy theory or another, which is, you know, their métier. That's what they do.
David, why did you decide to become the canary in the coal mine?
Well, some of it just had to do, I kind of fell into it. I was an environmental writer, but I worked at newspapers in the Pacific Northwest really in the late 70s. I was when I was 22, 21 years old, I was the editor of this little daily newspaper in the panhandle of Idaho, which was about 20 miles north of where the Aryan Nations folks had just decided the year before to move in and make that their the home for their compound. And for the next 30 years or so, they operated out of that compound, and all kinds of crime came out of it and all kinds of ugly stuff came out of it. And I got wrapped up in covering it just as a newspaper guy. And then in the 90s, I started writing, you know, freelancing environmental stories. And, you know, I honestly, I spent a lot of time also writing about killer whales, which is my preferred subject if I can. But no, I have to write about these guys because I did start writing about them as an environmental backlash story. They were organizing militias out here to organize against what they saw as a nefarious environmental United Nations conspiracy to enslave people.
David, reading the book, I learned that way back then, your publisher decided to ignore the Aryan Nation on the premise that all they wanted was publicity. But as you recall, he came to understand that these groups can't be ignored. If you ignore them, they fester in the darkness and interpret silence as tacit approval.
Right. That's right. Well, you know, I've studied hate crimes as well, and it's pretty interesting how hate criminals, people who perpetrate hate crimes, believe themselves to be doing so on behalf of their community. And, you know, that these are message crimes sent to tell outsiders to stay away sort of thing. And they, they see themselves in a very heroic light. And this is very much the same sort of thing that we see with that you see, it's the exact same mentality.
The new book takes us back to the election of Clinton and charts the rise of the movement of citizens, militias, and the survivalist movement. How did the early movements sort of morph into the contemporary far-right extremists?
Well, the one common factor, that the story that runs through all of this, is conspiracism, conspiracy theories, the whole industry of conspiracy theories, which really got its start in the 90s, as I explained in the book, around the Patriot Militia Movement. This is where all these United Nations, FEMA concentration camps, black helicopters, conspiracy theories got their start. And that is, in fact, where Alex Jones got his start. He was a guy who was on the radio peddling these wacko far-right John Bircher conspiracy theories on what was at the time just a very small radio station in Texas, and he had a very limited reach. But as I explained in the book, he became very much a media figure, especially after 9/11, and he started peddling the whole 9/11 truther stuff. And then by the time Obama became president, he had built this huge audience. Mostly through the internet.
Obama proved was physical evidence of the conspiracy theories.
Yes, yes, he was. Well, and of course, you know, he was the embodiment of them because of his birth certificate, right? his perfectly legitimate birth certificate that they kept finding to be illegitimate somehow, finding reasons to declare it illegitimate. That was pretty much, well, not just that, you know, they saw any kind of liberal enterprise, any kind of liberal legislation, and particularly healthcare reform, as an attempt to impose socialism on America. And basically, this is the period of time, especially during the Tea Party movement.
Well, okay, take a breath there, because you mentioned in Dispatches the John Birch Society. One looks back at that era as at a golden age of moderation. But I do recall that moment in 2008 when libertarian Ron Paul kicked off the Tea Party movement. Remind the listener.
Well, he actually had a what they called a Tea Party event in Boston that was part of was one of his big fundraisers. It was one of his very specialized, very smart way of raising funds on the internet. What do they call it? An internet bomb or something like that, a fun bomb. And it was it raised a huge chunk of money for it, but it also gave people the idea of, well, we could use this Tea Party theme to undermine and attack Obama and his budget, and attack him on sort of an economic basis. But the whole raison d'etre of the Tea Party from the start was pure opposition to Obama's agenda, no matter what it was. And so basically it turned into this cesspool of conspiracism. I mean, really, it was within about 6 months or so that we started seeing all of these things that we, you know, ideas and agendas and conspiracy theories that we were familiar with, that, you know, people who monitor this stuff are familiar with, from years of watching it being talked about on the radical right, suddenly moving into mainstream conservative circles and
that was pretty largely thanks to Fox News, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it was. Fox News was really the big conduit, as were some of the other right-wing pundits, particularly Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh. They were very fond of peddling the same garbage. And this is how, you know, and it just really spread very quickly. But Alex Jones has a real, and the whole conspiracy theory sort of segment, that industry, has really a special role in all this, because they were the ones that were mostly responsible for generating this alternative universe, which I call Alt America. It's basically an epistemological bubble, this sort of world that they create for themselves, built out of fake facts, or the alternative facts, as they call them, and conspiracy theories and cars like that.
David, forgive me for interrupting, but I want to ask you a question. Rush Limbaugh, in a sense, invented that persona. He wasn't always a total nutcase. He decided that he would mold it, because it gave him a chance to launch what became an extraordinary career. So I've always taken the view that Limbaugh is deep down not a true believer, but a role player. What about Alex? Do these people, in your view, do these people absolutely actually believe the nonsense they spout?
Well, it's really a fuzzy line. There's no question they breathe a lot of their own exhaust and believe it, you know, believe their own nonsense. I'm sure there's also a level where they know they're being utterly manipulative, especially when he's selling these quack health cures that he sells online and on the air. You know, and that's part of the whole conspiracy world, is that a lot of the conspiracies come from this world where they believe that the big conspiracy is that that they really do have a cure for cancer and they're hiding it from you, right? that's one of the, and it's caused by chemtrails or contrails in the sky, whatever they want to call them. This is very much sort of the, we see a lot of this stuff coming from folks who are traditionally on the left, but it's that. So that is part of the appeal of this conspiracism. But ultimately, it has this horribly unhinging effect that really separates people from reality. It's really important for people to remember that, and it's something that hasn't been discussed much, is that the gentleman who murdered 58 people in Las Vegas by shooting a high-powered rifle out of his hotel window at the Mandalay Bay on October 1st, was a conspiracy theorist, and he was doing this act on behalf of trying to wake up America to the conspiracies that he saw looming in the landscape. They're totally unhinged. And of course, that's an extreme example. But it goes down to, you know, people's families and their friendships.
Yeah.
And I'm covering a trial this fall of a young man up here on Samish Island who went so far down the Pizzagate hole, he got in an argument with his father over whether he's a part of the pedophile ring and stabbed him to death. So, it's really sad.
David, your book is Alt-America, but the phrase alt-right is a comparatively new term. Who coined it?
Oh, a gentleman named Richard Spencer. You know, he's one of the leading figures of the alt-right. And Spencer is leading white nationalist, and he created this website called Alternative Right back in 2009, and they quickly shortened it to alt-right in their sort of lingo and the references to it. And that's where the phrase came from. So, yes, Richard Spencer, I think, is credited with coining the phrase. It was quickly adopted by a pretty broad range of people, ranging from Breitbart. You know, Steve Bannon claimed that Breitbart News was the organ of the alt-right, but it really wasn't. But also claimed by people like, you know, Andrew Anglin at the Daily Stormer, which is an overtly neo-Nazi website, an incredibly ugly website, and fortunately is, I think, still off the web right now.
David, one of the points you make, which I think is absolutely extraordinary, is that the forebears of the alt-right, say in the KKK and the Aryan Nations, would have never used is humor.
No, the humor and the irony, and they're very forward-looking. This is part of what their appeal is, and this is really why they're so dangerous. They're very good at appealing to young white males between the ages of 15 and 30. I mean, that's their mark. That's their target audience. That's who they're marketing to. And it's especially appealing to young white men or young men that are in that sort of that age where, oh, the more transgressive, the humor, the better. You know, oh, I want to be touchy or, you know, an edgelord sort of thing. They have a whole, it's very smart, especially in terms of the way it leverages the innate lingo of the web, and especially these message boards and the video gaming boards where they do all their recruitment. I mean, this recruitment happens at a really elemental level. Let me give the example of what happened during the so-called Gamergate thing, that a lot of young men got attracted into this whole movement because they were frustrated and angry and afraid that their video games were going to be their first-person shooter video games were going to be taken away from them. These guys sold them on a conspiracy theory that this was what was going to be happening. Of course, it never did. And that they were all going to be replaced with pro-feminist, touchy-feely kind of games, right? And that was what the Gamergate controversy was about. And it became this really vicious, misogynistic attack on feminists and feminism. But along the way, these guys would go on to 4chan and 8chan and on these boards. And that's where the white nationalists would say, well, you know what these feminists are doing. There's a reason for they're doing this. They're part of this much larger plot to destroy white Western civilization called cultural Marxism. And cultural Marxism is basically a theory that's concocted by white nationalists back in the late 90s. It's a conspiracy theory, and it's like it's an updated version of Protocols of the Seven Elders of Zion, where you have a cabal of nefarious Jews secretly conspiring to enslave mankind, right? That's how they think.
There's a new conspiracy theory which I'd like to mention. We've only got minutes left, and that's QAnon.
Yeah, well, QAnon is the sort of meta theory of the day. It's very much it's kind of like an attempt to wrap all of the other conspiracy theories into a sort of grand field theory, right? We're, of course, NBC News just did a terrific expose where they found out that, you know, the whole thing was concocted by these three guys in different parts of the country who just did the whole thing as basically a money-making scam. But they, you know, you're able to leverage people's distrust of the mainstream media and the sort of selective gullibility that results from it. Because once people go down what they call red pilled, they're radicalized into this belief system, a la the Matrix, right? Once they go down that rabbit hole, it's really hard to get them to come back out because it becomes a maze of mirrors, a hall of mirrors, and you're not really sure what's real and what's not. And the whole QAnon thing is basically predicated on that. It's taking advantage of people's gullibility. But yeah, of course, the QAnon theory is essentially the idea that actually Robert Mueller and Donald Trump are secretly working in cahoots and are planning to wrap up all the pedophiles, the pedophilia ring that was running Pizzagate, that is Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and all the Democrats in the world. They're secretly working in cahoots, and someday, one of these days, the big reveal is going to be made and all these people will be wrapped up and arrested. And that's what Mueller is secretly working on.
I should point out, dear listener, that David argues that Trump can't be categorized as a true fascist because he's not an ideologue. His only real ideology is worship of himself, but that he could be described as a gateway drug for the extreme right. David, thank you very much for your time. I'm just about to give you a Koala Stamp Award, which we don't give out all that often on the program. It's for work above and beyond the call of duty. We highly recommend David's book, Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. It's published by Verso.